Hello and welcome to the This Month in Forensics podcast for August 2018. I'm Phil Moore and here's a few things from the last month that I wanted to talk about. Of course, this isn't everything. The industry puts out a massive amount of content every week. So for everything that I can find, you can head over to thisweekinforensics.com. Okay, we'll start with a number of posts in the last month that have highlighted that tools can be relied upon for a lot of stuff, but they won't necessarily get us or parse for us all the data, especially when it comes to parsing apps. Unfortunately, we have so many devices to go through and that we do need to push some of this workload back down to our tools, and figuring out the best way to incentivize and leverage the community to help expand that is a discussion for another time. But tools definitely will miss stuff. From there, it's a matter of us using a combination of our tools, our file format viewers, and testing to try and piece together the puzzle. Lots of tools have their different strengths, and some may do a better job than others. So, for example, I just recently had an iPhone examination where I used Blacklight, for example. It did a great job of giving me a timeline for the slice of time that I need to go through. And then I jumped across to UFED Physical Analyzer, and that helped me display one of the files that I really needed to be presented. I couldn't tell you what the file format was, but PA's file format viewer displayed it for me. And I could see a bunch of timestamps which, you know, weren't necessarily decoded because of the file format until I had it in PA. But I wouldn't have found that necessarily without using Blacklight. And then from there, I had to take it all out into another tool. In this instance, it was basically my reporting to corroborate with my testing to show what happened on this phone at this time. Unfortunately, we can't rely on our tools for everything, and sometimes we just have to go back to basics and do it all manually ourselves. So a number of posts that were shared this last month have kind of shown a few people that have really taken that ball and run with it. Starting with Delaney Jester, who described what data she was able to obtain from the Cortana app on Android, and she showed the manual process that she had to follow and compared it with the data that was processed by UFED Physical Analyzer, which didn't extract any of the data that she was looking for. So, you know, as I just said, tools do a great job, but they can't automatically parse the data that they don't know about, and there's lots of apps, millions of apps that they don't know about. So asking them to cover them all, it's just an impossible task. Alexi Brignoni at Initialization Vectors has released a tool for parsing the data found in the Microsoft Translate Android app. And he shows that a number of apps are storing data in JSON now, as well as SQLite, which may not be as easily to automatically parse. Thinking the Dynamic App Finder, for example, in IF and Axiom and Cellbrite's SQLite Builder, they're great for the SQLite, which we commonly see in apps, but now with JSON, you're going to have to go through their JSON or XML viewers that are also in a number of tools, including the ones that I just mentioned. He also looked at data that can be recovered from the iOS Nike Run app and produced a script for that, as well as continuing his research into Discord. He really pulled apart a lot of apps in the last month, so great work there. Tony at Archer Forensics took a look at the iOS Reddit app and wrote a fairly comprehensive post on his blog there. And lastly, I wanted to mention Cindy Murphy at Gilware shared a case study about a really interesting case. And she was able to use the smartphone user dictionary to provide a date range of the offense that was being investigated. So she ran through the actual artifact and how that the dictionary on, I can't remember if it was an Android or iOS device here, was basically being populated generally sequentially, and then by attributing some of the words that have known timestamps, such as a text message or a web search, you're able to provide a rough timeline for when the words of interest when they may have occurred, basically, or most likely would have occurred between point A and point B. And sometimes you might not be able to give an exact timestamp of when something happens, but a rough idea or a range can be very helpful, as was the case with Cindy. All right, moving on. Some more tools added APFS support. So we had the Tola Insight Forensic version 4.11. As well as Belcroft Evidence Center 2018 version 9.2. X-Ways 19.7 was officially released. They've had APFS support in beta for a little while, but now it's official. I don't know if it deals with the encryption that's available. Typically, I understand XWays doesn't deal with encryption, but they may have added encryption support for their APFS, but I haven't looked at it. And then Blacklight 2018 R3, of course, has had APFS support since the beginning of the year, but this release has also included APFS snapshots, which from my reading appears to store the state that your file system was in at the time that the snapshot was taken, which can be very useful, of course, especially if you've got deleted files, you might be able to find timestamps of those files. They also added Spotlight parsing, which I don't think anyone else has previously done. I definitely haven't really looked into it, I guess. So, Blacklight added Spotlight parsing, but then at the same time, Yogesh Khatri at Swift Forensics released an open source Spotlight parser for his Mac apt script. Lots of interesting stuff going on in the Mac space, which is great. And then back to the Windows side, Arsenal Consulting launched Hive Recon and HBIN Recon, which they're able to show how can extract a lot more registry data than other comparative tools. Basically, they looked at a few Windows 7 and Windows 10 images and were able to show that by extracting the data with their tools and then parsing them, you're able to get a lot more information, potentially a lot more useful information when you're extracting that information using Hive and HBIN Recon. Especially when you're looking at Hives extracted from Windows 8 Plus hibernation files, where basically the other tools are all failing rather than reporting incomplete data, they just weren't working at all. So this might prove very important to a case. It's one of those things that it might not be important to every case, but when it's important, it's going to be really, really important. So it's great that these guys were able to put this tool out there, or these two tools out there. Rather than keeping them internally, they've put them up for people to purchase. There were a couple of great articles on execution artifacts. One was by Sarah Edwards, listing out what can be gleaned from the KnowledgeC database on the current iOS and macOS to determine precise user and application usage. The other was a Sunday Funday Challenge entry by Adam Harrison, of course, listing out the various places you can look for evidence of execution on a Windows and Mac host. Dave Cohen posted up a few test kitchens, which are always worth watching. I'm not really going to go into why you should... Well, actually, no. I'll go into why you should watch the test kitchens rather than what happened in these test kitchens. So the reason why they're great is because Dave tests some things that he thinks should happen or things he knows should happen and kind of explains what's going on in the back end to the best of his knowledge. So it's great, especially like we had a look at some Windows 7 interactions previously, and you can kind of see this is what I know, this is what I haven't tested, this is what I expect to happen. Has that always happened that way, or am I going crazy kind of thought process that's happening? If you want to read my summaries, I've posted them in the past, but the links will be in the show notes. Basically, like I said, the reason worth watching is just to see how Dave, who really does know what he's doing, walks through the way that he would do his testing and explains what is going on and why he thinks artifacts should and shouldn't be presented. Adam Harrison at 1, 2, 3, 4, and 6 has noticed that in Windows 10, we've recently seen the retirement of RegBack, and he put a call out and other people have confirmed it, so it's entirely possible that Microsoft has decided that that's no longer going to be useful for their purposes, and ultimately means we can't use it anymore either, which is a bit of a shame. Adam also did some testing on the plug-and-play cleanup schedule task that previously came in when Windows 10 started, but from Windows 10 17.03 onwards, that task shouldn't be present on a clean install. If you do an upgrade, it doesn't get removed, but if you buy a brand new laptop, you shouldn't have that scheduled task anymore, which is probably good from a rollout perspective if you're in an organization, because you can just get rid of that task and all of a sudden you won't have the last 30 days of USB history and you'll get significantly more, which is great. Twitter user Beanbag King at O Security, I guess. There's a weird symbol in front of the O. Posted a bit about event logs, showing the client-side events for an RDP session. So this is a complimentary article to John Poling's Windows RDP-related event logs article, which is great. So now we've got the RDP side, the RDP connection from client and server side, which if you're investigating that commonly, it's probably worth getting quite familiar with both of these artifacts, or these articles about the event logs and understanding those artifacts. Twitter user Wivernsec, I definitely can't pronounce that, has posted a table of ext4 timestamp changes based on a variety of interactions, which is very similar to the table on ATFS that Sans has produced as part of their Windows Forensic Analysis poster. Great to have these for multiple file systems. I'm really looking forward to one for HFS Plus and APFS because that, you know, could be very useful to people, especially with the proliferation of that file system. But, you know, definitely happy to see that coming out for ext4 as well. Ladrina Churn won a Sunday Funday challenge on file uploads in popular browsers. So Dave posted this up a couple of weeks ago. The main reason I like Ladrina's answer was that she went into a bit about how she go about researching to find this information. Sometimes the answers aren't readily apparent on your favorite blogs and all that stuff, but you can dig into the developer documentation and as a result, that might give you a clue. So I had a similar issue a while back, and Dan at 4and6k was able to help me by going through the actual source code of Firefox to find what might happen when a specific option was selected. And sometimes that might be the way you find the answer rather than doing black box testing, especially if you're using something that's a bit more open source. In my instance, it's Firefox, and obviously that's not always going to be the case with your browser information. Some Internet Explorer, for example, you're not necessarily going to find source code. But they might release some information on the developer side that might be very useful for us to use. Matt at Bit of Hex has written his thoughts on taking notes in an investigation, and I've written my thoughts on the topic on one of my ThinkDFR posts a while back. And mine was mainly covering the role of writing an investigation report that will give you a bit more of a bit more capacity to write some technical reasoning that doesn't necessarily go to the non-technical people. So I don't necessarily follow the exact same process that Matt has written. I don't put a time and date with every one of my actions, but definitely I've found that writing things out helps me understand what I'm seeing and also refer back to years later, which is not unusual when I have to pull that case out and talk about it. For example, I've got a case coming up that I started 2 years ago and haven't looked at, but I was able to pull my notes out and get quite familiar with it before I had to do more work on the job. I also like taking screenshots. All of that stuff goes in your notes, and I don't understand really, and Brett Shaver's kind of reiterated my thoughts as well, from his own experience, you know, I don't understand people that are scared that their notes are going to hurt them. I find not having notes is what's going to hurt me more often, because I'd definitely be lost when I get asked, you know, how do you know this? And I can just go, well, I've got a screenshot and it shows here's this thing. Or I've got, you know, what I was looking at the time. I find that if I was able to present my evidence, you know, 5 minutes after I did the exam, great, I can do it, no worries. But like I said, it might be a couple of years later, and not having notes about that makes that quite difficult. Magnet Forensics put out a call for their scholarship program for a professional in law enforcement. The prize for the scholarship winner, well, the prizes, I guess, look pretty awesome. And definitely commend Magnet for putting that out there. So the winner's going to get free training and access to the MCFE certification exam. They get a free Axiom license and a free trip to Techno Security in 2019. I'm not sure which Techno Security. I think there's three next year, but I guess Myrtle Beach is the main one. But I guess whoever's going to win, they can tell us when they go Looking forward to finding out who's going to win. I do wonder who's going to recommend themselves. Magnet does say, you know, you can nominate yourself or get someone else to nominate you, because I know I'd feel weird nominating myself. But yeah, it's really good to see companies putting out scholarship programs like that. And yeah, it's great to see. Lastly, there were a whole bunch of test images released. So Simpson Garfinkel advised that there was another test case uploaded to the Digital Corpora website, which was called the National Gallery DC 2012 attack, which I think was obviously it references 2012. It is reasonably old now, but test data is test data, and you definitely will be seeing artifacts that are present today that were present in 2012. So it might be something worth looking into. The DEF CON CTF was announced and open to the public, and we've since had at least one person get a full 100% score on it. I was actually at the DEF CON CTF, which was a lot of fun. We really didn't sleep very much, but Dave and Matt put on a great show, and we had a lot of fun going through it and lots of fun stress. The DFIWS 2018 challenge was released and relates to the investigation of a drug lab containing a variety of devices. So that, I think, has been put together in conjunction with some Korean university, I think. I'm not sure. And then also out of Korea was another website called Digital Forensics Challenge, which I've only just had a look at. It looks pretty interesting. For the next few months, there's a series of digital forensics tasks, and you can submit, and there's prizes for the Korean team and foreign team or individual winners, which looks great. So it's pretty cool. In the last month, we've seen quite a few challenges and test images and lots of information being put out there for people to use and expand on their existing knowledge if they really want to. So that's all for the last month of course, that isn't everything, but that's everything that I thought was worth a bit of a mention. There's so much more that came out, and for everything that I have found, you can head over to thisweekinforensics.com. Quick shout out to my Patreon subscribers. If you get a bit of value out of my work and you want to give a little bit of value back, the link is in this poster at the top of the page and the social links. The Patreon supporters have every month, you know, they give a little bit of value to me, and I really, really appreciate the support. And as a result, they get a little bit more back. So they'll get the links that I've mentioned, as well as the time codes that make it a little bit easier to look up what I've mentioned. So yeah, thanks a lot for those that have pledged. If you've got any suggestions or recommendations, you can let me know on Twitter. I'm at Phil Moore. And special thanks to my friend Jeff, who's Animatic on SoundCloud, for letting me use his tracks. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll speak to you next month.